recorded in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to the Infamous Indie Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Melillo. This show features real-life stories of Indiana's most infamous horrors, Circle City serial killers, and crimes, both current and cold. I sit down and interview people who know these crimes the best. Sometimes they're authors, sometimes law enforcement, and even family members of the victims. In the end, you'll see a darker side of Hoosier hospitality. Hey everybody, it's Joe Melillo from the Infamous Indie Podcast, your host, your faithful host, back again. We're going to get into the story in just a minute, but first I want to go over a couple big things, huge, exciting things that y'all need to know about. They've been in the works for a couple of months now, and I'm officially given the go green light to let you know about them. So I'll get just 1 second. Just hold your horses, all right, Joe? Jeez, take it easy. First, gotta say a couple of shout outs. My Patreon page, again, you can go to patreon.com and search for Infamous Indie, and you can help my podcast by donating to the podcast Patreon page. And when I say donate, because I use that money to actually run the podcast, not only buy the Audio Boom account, which is the server that gets it out to everybody, but also the editing software I'm paying for myself. So two people I want to shout out. First and foremost, my friend Jessica. I know Jessica outside of the podcasting sphere. I actually know her from downtown Indianapolis, and a huge shout out to her and her company she works for. I love those guys over there. A little shout out to Eastley Winery in downtown Indianapolis. What a wonderful organization and owner. And then Jessica works there, and she is incredible. Thank you so much, Jessica. That's how we know each other, through my relationship at Wish TV. And then also my other Patreon subscriber, Kristen, just another shout out for her. You know, she's been following me for the last couple of months. So thank you to her. I just kind of want to acknowledge anybody who is a Patreon. It blows my mind to this day that a year ago, because we're about to hit a year on this podcast, I didn't have anybody listening. It was just an idea. And now these folks are supporting me. And thank you, thank you, thank you. You can go to patreon.com, Infamous Indie, and search if you'd like to help out. There's some benefits at different levels of donations that you guys give. So again, thank you. All right, now on to the major news. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to tell you guys. Finally, we're here. For the last 6 months or so, I have connected, as you know, because you've heard it on the podcast, with three other podcasters in the Indianapolis area. And of course, like me, they're obsessed with true crime. And more importantly, they're obsessed with Indiana true crime. So they cover other cases too. Like I know Cold Case Chronicles is talking about Michigan, a couple of cases in Michigan. Three C's podcast still doing, you know, they're known for their Burger Chef murders. They were shouted out on Burger Chef murder investigations. They were shouted out on My Favorite Murder. So they've blown up. And then my friends over at Hoosier Homicide, as you heard a couple of times, not only on the group podcast that we do, but also the Richmond Hill Explosion. They're my main interview because they were there. So, the three of them, plus me, have created our first ever, we're calling it a co-op network. It's a network of podcasters that we're able to hang out and be together and help each other, right? We meet about once a month, and we are officially calling it, and you can go to the website right now, the Central State Studios. That's what we are, Central State Studios. So this podcast is brought to you by Central State Studios. And I'm just honored because those guys are so nice. We are all, and what you'll learn on the website is we are all on the same mission, which is why we're friends. We want to do good through this medium, and by you listening, you're helping us do that. So thank you. If you can subscribe, if you haven't, or give 5 stars to those guys, those three others, you can go to centralstatestudios.com to learn more. And here's the bigger news, guys. We are going to have a live show at the Vogue in Broad Ripple, not downtown Indianapolis, at the Vogue. It's a famous venue here in Indianapolis on April 18th. If you guys have questions, please reach out to me. I mean, I would love for everyone who wants to be there to be there. I believe tickets are $10 ahead of time, $13 at the door. You walk in, it's 3:00 in the afternoon on a Saturday. on April 18th at the Vogue. Maybe go hang out, get a couple drinks, watch some true crime podcasters talk about cases. In terms of the actual show structure, we're still working out some basics, but there's going to be a meet and greet at the end, so we're kind of able to meet some of our fans, but also we're going to have discussion, and I'm trying to line up an interview from somebody that I've interviewed in my first year so that we're able to give them another platform to spread their news or talk about what their experiences were and maybe some of their passions. So that's going to happen. So at the Vogue, it's going to be called Murder at the Vogue, brought to you by Central State Studios. So, I mean, wow. Afternoon of True Crime to start your weekend off. My heart is racing right now thinking about how excited I am, because it's going to be awesome. So tickets will be going up online soon and at the Vogue. So we'll put that information on my Instagram page on infamousindy.com. And then if you want on my Facebook page, if you guys want to message me or get a hold of me, then I'll send you the link. So thank you. So two big news. Central State Studios is officially a thing. And now we're doing our first live show on April 18th. At the Vogue. So pass the news along. Let's get into this episode. Again, like I said before, oh man, this one is a rough one. If you are triggered in any way by addictions or just the fact that, you know, talking about drug use, just know that there's a trigger warning here, because it can get a little bit, we're getting really deep with Wes. Wes was a former drug addict who has turned his life around. I met him through the Recovery House organization. They help homeless people get back on their feet. We finally got connected. He's been being followed for a year. And so I want to play you a little tease of that documentary that he is starring in. And I'll talk to you right after this. So take a listen.
He was a kid, which is tragic, to be hopeless and be in your 20s and to have nowhere to go and feel like you're disconnected from everybody that cares about you, and it's all from your own choices.
I would always tell Wes that he was definitely like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He was such a different person when he was high and when he wasn't.
He had, from shooting dope, had gotten an abscess on his arm and had to have surgery to have it removed. They literally cut his arm open from right here to here. He continued to shoot dope into that same arm before they even did the skin graft.
His mom, for Christmas, paid for him to go to a local detox program.
He had passed out in the middle of the street.
There was Wes crawling on my floor.
I've overdosed probably 10 different times, been revived at the hospital 5 of those times. The most recent time was I was using in a bathroom at a gas station and locked the door behind me, used, and next thing I know I was being transported to the hospital in the back of an ambulance. The police officer was able to gain entry into the bathroom and administer Narcan on me and save my life. It's been a goal of mine to find the police officer and thank them. I've been searching for one of the officers that arrested me. It turns out they saved my life. I immediately went to Pathway.
He came when we don't have beds. We encourage guys to just come and hang out and be here during the day and go to meetings and have lunch and things like that.
I know I didn't have to have money to get in there, and applied, stayed on the street for 3 more nights until they had a bed open. And man, I never looked back from that.
So Wes became involved with a nonprofit, a partner agency called Back on My Feet.
When I first heard that Wes was getting involved with the program and they told me that he was jogging every morning, I was floored. I could never imagine Wes jogging, running, even walking any distance unless there were sirens behind him.
Running, it's my medicine, it's my meditation, it's my serenity. It's where I talk to God. It's where I reflect on where I've been, where I am, where I want to go.
Wes's goal of 2020 is to run the Boston Marathon.
He's definitely a changed person today. He's a miracle.
To see him go from there to where he is now, it's amazing.
That same determination that almost killed him, he now uses to save his life.
Guys, this one is going to really, really affect you. If it's hard for you to hear about addiction behavior, if it's hard for you to hear about drug use, if it's hard for you to hear about the depths that someone can go in so low in their life, if it triggers you in any way, get ready, because this episode will trigger you, and I just want you to be aware that what we're talking about is some serious stuff. The opioid crisis in this country is enormous. In fact, the Indiana State Museum just opened an opioid crisis exhibit to create more awareness about what people need to be doing and how people can help. Ultimately, this is a statewide, citywide, nationwide issue. And it sometimes starts as easy as getting your wisdom teeth pulled out and someone just doesn't have the ability, because these drugs are so powerful that they can take over your life and ruin everything you've ever had. I just want to tell you all I love you, that I really, really care. I've gotten a lot of messages over the last couple of weeks. We're about to hit a year's worth of my podcasting and Infamous Indie. I'm just really, really excited to have you guys listen to this episode. It's something that, where I feel like this is a perfect example of how we can do good in this world and how talking about these serious issues can actually make a difference. So please enjoy this episode. Stay tuned after. I have a little reminder for you all, but I'm very, very excited to bring you this episode. And please, again, another trigger warning. If drugs and alcohol and addiction is something that you're triggered by, understand that that's what you're going to hear on this episode. I hope you're as moved as I was during it, and I hope you enjoy it. Thanks. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the interview portion of the Infamous Indie podcast. And a guest today joining me, I'm joined in his apartment. He invited me into his home here in downtown Indianapolis. We're on Capitol Avenue. And his name is Wes Doty. Wes, thank you for joining me on Infamous Indie.
Not a problem.
We met each other. A little bit of history between Wes and I is we met each other when I was an MC for the Recovery House Gala. It was 2018's gala. I ended up finding some really good friends of mine at that gala who I'm still friends with to this day. So that was a really good experience for me. But more importantly, we were able to share your story. And at that time, you had a couple of cameramen following you around, right?
Yes, right.
What is that? Tell people what that was.
That was so a professor at IUPUI was heard about my story through a friend, through another nonprofit here in town, and we connected. He started filming me that day, and then he literally followed me around for the next year and making a documentary about my running and my past history. And
well, that's what we're going into. So this is, you guys all know, if you listen to my podcast, you know I try to do things a different way. We're not going to give you the same crime content that everybody else is putting out there. In fact, we're going to take a different look on it. And we are talking to a recovering addict. Wes, you're a recovering addict.
Yes.
This is an important, vital, informational point of a podcast, because there are so many people in this world, in Indianapolis specifically, that are struggling with opioid addiction, with heroin addiction, with cocaine addiction, with alcoholism. There is a serious, serious vein through this community and through this world that we're living in, where opioid crisis is real. And this is an opportunity for us to confront it, to learn about it, and more importantly, hear from someone who's recovering from it and is thriving. I mean, honestly, you are an inspiration to addicts everywhere, because of the fact that there are people out there that just don't believe they can do it, but you're an example of how you can do it. So what we're going to do, and what you're going to hear in this episode, is we're going to go back and we're going to learn from Wes from the beginning, because you were a regular dude. You were just like everybody else, mm-hmm. but something happened that made you turn towards drugs as a way to help you feel better or heal yourself in a way.
Right.
So go back to what was one of the first times you remember as a kid. Just good, bad, the whole nine yards.
You know, honestly, the memories I remember the most are good. I mean, my going on vacation with with my mom. She would take me and my brother on vacation. But you know what stands out to me the most when I think about my using is not having my dad around. So, and I feel like that's what the opportunity to use drugs came about in a time in my life when I didn't have direction. And it literally, I always promised myself and, you know, everybody around me that, oh, I would never use drugs, right? Because, I mean, we're always told not to. But the opportunity came at a time that I had no direction. I solely believe that's the reason why I first tried to use that, just to get out of how I was feeling.
You were living in Anderson. You grew up in Anderson, Indiana, which is about 40 minutes north, just south of Muncie, for anybody who doesn't know Indiana. And ultimately, that town is not the best town for growing up. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It just means there's more opportunity for you to use drugs in that town than maybe some other towns around Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up in Anderson? Tell people how old you are. And what was it like growing up in the years that you were a kid in elementary school? And, I mean, I went through a D.A.R.E. program. We're about the same age.
Yep.
And I went through a D.A.R.E. program, and I did the same thing. You know, never smoking weed, never doing drugs in my life. So, do you remember what that was like?
I remember being in school, you know, being taught not to say no, right? The D.A.R.E. program. I remember being approached as a kid to use drugs, and it scared the death out of me. I remember being flat out scared about the whole situation that just happened. And
who asked you to use drugs?
It was a random thing. Also, I mean, I guess I can bring this up. My oldest brother first got me high off weed when I was 7 years old. I stuffed that down. Like I didn't continue using, and I kind of forgot about it. Honestly, it's crazy, but
jeez, until just now?
No, not until just now, but until recently, honestly. Yeah. So, you know,
Was your dad left?
Yeah, my dad was, my dad lived in town, but he never was, like, in the family. Mm-hmm. Like, he would be, like, he lived with us still, but we would go on vacations without him, you know. Go do everything without him. And I feel like that was where most of my internal pain originated as a kid, way before I even used drugs. And I only see that now in hindsight. Like,
pain comes out in different forms, and that was maybe something you were struggling with and you didn't even realize. So, at least, you know, I can speak to that a little bit in the sense my dad left when I was 9, and abandonment issues, the whole 9 yards. So you're going through, you're growing up in Anderson, you have this kind of alternative life with your parents and your mom and your brother. He's done this, you know, you're growing up with them. And then you start obviously getting into middle school and high school.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the first time you used?
Yes. Yep.
Was it marijuana?
It was actually alcohol.
Okay.
Yeah. It was Sky Vodka.
Oh man.
Yeah.
And we kind of laugh. We're chuckling a little bit because, I mean, I remember sneaking a drink out of my mom's,
right,
and filling it back up with water. You mm-hmm. know,
yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. All the bottles were water.
Yeah. How old were you?
I was 13. I remember. So what's different about my story? I want to say, and I could be wrong, but I never was peer pressured to do anything. I mean. When I started using on my own, I remember staying at my friend's house, and his mom came home one day and was asking about medicine that was missing out of the cabinet. And it just shocked me that why would anybody take somebody else's medicine? And my little intuitive mind got to racing and wondering what was this all about? And I remember being secretive, like I'm 14 or 15 years old, and none of my friends obviously do drugs. No one's taking pills, no one's stealing pills, but I remember taking I remember taking a pain medicine and shortly after that and immediately feeling a love. And I describe that as love because it's a feeling I wasn't used to that I really, really felt like I was longing for the whole time without even it being said.
That's incredible. So the feeling of being high translated to you like you were being loved.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. That's, I've never heard that before. Would you, and you were still 13 or 14?
I was about 14 or 15. Okay. It was like 7th or 8th grade.
God, those years sucked. I hated those years so much. It's interesting that you say it like that because people describe it in different ways from what I understand, but either way, it's a feeling like you've never felt before and you want it again. So you got high for the first time on something other than alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And were you feeling guilty? Do you remember feeling guilty or ashamed?
Yes, I remember that I wasn't feeling any of that. I remember feeling, I felt like I found something that I'm gonna, and I remember saying this as a kid to myself. I remember it really well. I remember saying that this is it, and this is what I'm gonna be doing for the rest of my life. I remember being a kid and saying that to myself, and it started right there, and I was using, it started out maybe twice a week, you know, in middle school, and then it gradually escalated to where that's literally all I was thinking about. And that's all the way through high school.
Were you stealing people's, is that how you were getting?
Oh yeah.
Tell me about, yeah, I guess I should just ask, how were you getting your fix?
So I remember I was stealing. Yeah. I was stealing cause I didn't have a job. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would use the money my mom would give me. And you know, what got me so far into it so early was that my friend's mom that I was talking to you about, that I was staying at, that even got my attention to him. She was like a nursing home nurse, like the manager, and she would be in charge of disposing all the, like, the expired medicine, and she would keep it all. And so it was in abundance that I could just,
why was she keeping it?
I don't know.
Was she selling it?
I would say she was using it, but then
either way, I mean,
yeah,
it's just not right
for sure.
Oh, wow. Okay. And at one point, well, at any point during your spiral, in high school, cause we still haven't gotten past that. Was there any time where someone reached you out and was like, dude, something's going on. You need help. Can I help you?
No, there wasn't anybody in school that was hip to it, right? But because I was hanging out with people that were doing it too at that time. Mm-hmm. I remember we would skip school and drive around in the nice neighborhoods and look for, we would knock on people's doors to see if they were home. And if they didn't answer the front door, we would go around back and we would kick the doors in and we would just run through their house and get whatever was of value. Or, I mean, we were looking for anything that was of value, but you know, the best score is just the drugs, because that's what all the stuff of value would have went to anyways. So, and I mean, I eventually got expelled from school I was suspended from school for stealing or for fighting, one of the two. And I was caught red-handed inside of a house in the neighborhood I lived in.
And, how were you caught?
The owner came home
at the exact moment.
I was in his house, you know, when he came home.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. I remember I was.
Were you using it that? I mean, not using, but were you high?
I wasn't high, but I was about to be high.
Yeah,
because that's what I was there for, and I knew they had this certain.
Oh, got it.
This certain pill.
So did you? Do you mind saying what pill it was?
It was Ritalin.
Okay.
Hundreds and hundreds of it.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Why did you know he had it?
It was someone from school.
Oh, okay.
I knew he was prescribed a ton of Ritalin, and I was, it sounds funny now, just, I was suspended from school and I was bored and I went and hit a lick is, you know, what I would say back then.
You would call it hit a lick.
When he
walked in, you know, you're kind of on teetering on the edge of this is my life.
Mm-hmm.
I could make the decision. I'll be fine. And then he walks in. Do you remember that moment? He saw you and you saw him?
Yeah.
What was that like?
I mean, it was a terrible feeling. I mean, I knew I was busted, and I knew, I felt like the cat was out of the bag type of feeling. Like, oh, here we go. I'm going away for this one, you know, as a kid. And I did. I went to juvenile for like 40 days. They sent me to Fairbanks for 90. I wasn't doing anything to help myself there at Fairbanks. So they rearrested me. The county came and got me and took me back to to juvenile. Then they sent me to boys school.
What's boys school?
It's DOC for juveniles. Got so it. It's Department of Corrections.
I'm taking video of this for extra content for my Patreon subscribers. I hope you don't mind.
No, it's...
Yeah.
It's good.
We're going to be able to watch you, too, on the documentary soon, so they'll have extra content to watch of you.
Nice.
Ultimately, that... You were arrested. Do you remember... Because, you know, admittedly, I've been arrested, too.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, I'm not as clean as you think. But not for nearly... anything as serious, but when you're put in the back of the cop car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're a kid, you mm-hmm. know, you're like, you're like 15, 16, or mm-hmm. you're in high school at that point?
Yeah, I'm 16 years old.
Yeah. And you're like, what, and was that the first time you were ever arrested? Or?
Yeah, it was. I mean,
it didn't scare you.
No, I was not scared. Wow. Yeah, that is something I don't know if I've ever been asked that, but no, I wasn't scared. I remember that. And
it's that invincibility.
I literally accepted that was my lifestyle and that was what was going to be a part of it.
Okay. Yeah, this is it. I'm just one of those guys. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm just going to be that kid.
Yep.
Wow. And that might be from where you grew up. You know, you're just being taught that and nothing against your parents. Cause let's face it. People who go through this are cycled. It's a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, at least from my knowledge and research, research a lot of it, it's a cycle, right? And we're just trying to break that cycle. Mm-hmm. And you know, sitting here in your apartment where you know you're this accomplished runner now, where you're running the marathon in Boston in 2020, mm-hmm. and to think about where you came from at 16 and where you are now, how old are you now?
31.
Mm-hmm. Dude, you're an incredible story.
Mm.
And you're breaking your parents' cycle.
Yeah.
of addiction. And, you know, it might not be as bad as what some people think. Oh, you know, some people are beat to, you know, that's why they turn to drugs or whatever it is. There's still something there that turns you to it. And you weren't scared. You were like, mm-hmm. this is my life. That's mm-hmm. crazy to me. So, okay, you go away. So you're done with high school. You're 16. You're mm-hmm. going into juvie. You're going out of juvie. What's the next step? Where'd your life go from there?
I got released from boys school. I think it was right before I turned 18. It was probably 2 months after I got released. I overdosed for the first time, and that's the first of many. And that was, you would think that, oh man, I remember that first overdose. It was me and my ex-girlfriend. We were using together and we were using the exact same amount of the exact same stuff. And
is there a rule that why you do that when you're with somebody?
You know, there is, but there wasn't that night at all. And she's the one that saved my life. Ultimately. I mean, she called the ambulance and I remember the only thing I remember is like, I remember hearing my name and I remember the feeling of being an inch underwater and trying real hard to get above water where I can breathe, and I just couldn't, and I just kept flashing in and out. And I remember the paramedics cutting my shirt open, and then the next thing I know, I was in the hospital. And you know, that was my first overdose. I overdosed and was rushed to the hospital two more times in the next 2 months after that too. And it's what's crazy and blows my mind is that I never considered stopping, honestly. Like, I know I was putting everybody in pain, and you know, I was putting everybody in harm's way, and I never once considered quitting. I didn't.
Why do you think that is? Where is that in the brain? Because people who aren't addicts or have never gone through it will never understand that.
You're right.
And there's just no answer.
There's no answer. I mean,
it's the ultimate question. I mean, it's why we're here right now. Why? That's why there's an opioid. Because if people who loved the people that are going through what you went through could stop it, they would. And if there was an answer, we'd figure it out. Mm-hmm. But we can't.
Right. I mean, I didn't, you know, I grew up a great kid. I mean, I had honor roll all the way up. I was amazing at baseball, always played in the All-Stars. Like, and I was I was going to be the money maker. You know what I mean? Like those things. And
you're the ringer.
Yeah. And I just didn't, I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's in the brain, you know, like it's a brain disease. I don't know. I have no idea. I just,
you just did it.
I did it. And man, I've lived it for a long time.
Yeah. Wow. So you overdose. It feels like, I've never heard that, where it's under an inch of water and you can't get a breath.
Yeah.
Is there a medical reason why that was happening to you? What were you using?
Yeah, I stopped breathing. Yeah, I was methadone. Ultimately, yeah, it stopped my breathing. So that's why I look back on it.
Is there a difference between methadone and meth?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What is it?
Methadone's a opiate.
Okay.
So it stops your breathing.
Gotcha.
And that's why people overdose on heroin. Same exact thing.
So it's another branch of heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
And you were shooting it up. Or were you?
I never shot up.
Okay.
At this point, and I always, that was another thing I swore that I would never get.
Oh, another line in the sand that you didn't say you were going to cross.
Right.
Right.
Yep. And yep. And you know, it just, I continued that, man. And I put my mom in a lot. Through a lot of pain, and everybody else. I remember getting caught one time when I was suspended from school. I went to work with my, this was before anybody knew that I was using drugs. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to work with my stepdad, which was, I mean, he's like a handyman. He goes to different houses and works for people. And I freaking rifled through their cabinet when no one was looking, and they had a whole bottle, you know, a whole freaking bottle of pain meds.
Did you take the whole bottle?
I took the whole bottle. Yeah, I took the whole bottle.
And you were how old? Sorry.
I keep asking.
I love timelines.
15.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was young. Too young.
Yeah.
But I remember, this is what sticks out for me, is I remember I took the whole bottle, and I took 13 or 14 of them at one time. And that was just to get me where I like to be. That this is what blows my mind. And so my mom, they found out, because obviously their whole bottle of meds is gone. And I fess up to it and I return it. And they said there was only 5 missing. And so I went with that is how many I took. Because my mom's bawling her eyes out. She can't believe it. And
at that point, you're going to lie your way out of it any way you can.
Yes. And what stands out the most is my mom crying because I took 5 of them. And that blew her mind that her little kid was taking 5 of this opiate, this really strong medicine. In reality, I took 13. She didn't even know the progression of I was at such a young age. And I remember at Fairbanks, you get there and you do an assessment and fill out a paper of like your history up until that point. And mine was, you know, I was 16 years old and it was progressed to where like a lifetime 40-year-old man's addiction would be at that point.
What? I just don't understand how it got so quick. Mm-hmm. Why so quick?
I don't know.
I keep asking these questions.
It's okay, man. Because I don't know either, man. Oh. And look, I just think it's who I am. Because look, I stop using and I get really fast. Yeah. Like I just get back.
You're a runner.
I was intuitive. Like when I would research all these drugs that I would be doing before I would use it. Like I was just such a nerd about it.
It's such a crazy thing to say. Not crazy as in bad, just like blows my mind. Blows our mind. I mean, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And again, guys, for my listeners, I just want to thank you for sharing as much as you are. I mean, this is dirty. This is deep down and dirty. This is the real shit. You guys want to know what real crime and true crime looks like? This is the real shit that we're talking about. Yeah, okay, we can hear about a serial killer, Herb Baumeister from Westfield, but every day there's people struggling with this shit in life right now. So let's get on the train a little bit here and let's start learning. So start figuring out the signs. I mean, you could tell addicts are liars. They're going to lie their way until they lie and lie and lie and lie and lie. Mm-hmm. So just Wes is a perfect example. He's a kid. He's taking 13 and he's taking 5 as if, or he's accepting 5 as the punishment. And when really he knows in his heart it was 13. So you overdosed 2 more times.
Oh.
And were they very similar experiences? Do you remember those 2 as well?
I've overdosed more than that. I've been rushed to the hospital a total of 5 times.
Oh, you were just saying you did 2 in the next couple of months.
Yes, 2 more back to back. So where yes, I remember those 2. One of them, my brother found me, and when he talks about it today, it tears him up. It tears me up seeing him being tore up. But and then another one was in that same house, and someone. Thank God somebody heard me gasping for breath. And that's the noise, I mean, that I was making. I don't remember it, but, you know, I've overdosed multiple times to where I didn't get found and I wasn't rushed to the hospital. But thank God my body was able to make it through that and I woke up. My nose is broke from waking up underneath a bush outside of my work. You know, I've overdosed so many different times to where I wasn't rushed to the hospital. And it was like I was living. It's crazy because an opiate user, they like to be right on the edge of for...
How far can you get? How close can you get?
That is why they are so dangerous, because that's where opiate addicts... like to be high, right there on the edge of too much, and then a little ahead of not enough, obviously. But
and then Wes is using his hands to describe what we're talking about, so it's just funny because we are podcasting. But you guys can imagine falling over an edge, like literally tightrope walking on a cliff over the side, and you're putting one foot over the other, just trying to get how much closer can I get? Hey, maybe if I do a little bit more, maybe I'll get a little bit high. Maybe it'll feel better.
Yep.
You know, you're trying to find that next high.
Mm-hmm.
It's all it is. It's pursuit of that next high. It's never ending. You're never going to get it until you get to the point where you are, where you were overdosing 4 or 5 times, 6 times.
Over and over.
Over and over.
Going to jail over and over.
Why were they letting you out of jail?
Just, like, I mean, I was going to jail for other things. I've never been busted with drugs at this time. You know, criminal mischief, resisting arrest. I did get 3 OWIs, stuff like that. And I mean, they're full, you know, so they release you. And I mean, honestly, with all this being said, I've lived in 5 different homeless shelters. I've been to I've been to three different rehabs. 31. I'm 3.5 years clean. So, I mean,
stopped at 28.
28.
You know, that's when male brain stops growing, right?
Great.
That's when you're kind of screwed, bro.
Yeah, yeah, I'm fucked.
No, you're not fucked. You're a testimony.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite podcasts I've ever done with you. So, when you were 28, right? Let's just skip forward. So you were actually, if you can talk about it, one last thing I want to ask you about all this negative, right? Because we're going to go into the positive here, guys. Do you think the worst crime you committed while you were using and while you were in the depths and the thralls of your addiction?
Breaking and entering. I mean, honestly.
Yeah. I never
stole any cars.
Right. I was going to say Grand Theft Auto or.
Never killed anybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, it would definitely be.
We'd have a different kind of podcast if you were going to admit to killing someone. I didn't expect that he was going to say that, guys. So I just meant, like, let's just be real. You committed crimes. Mm-hmm. What's the worst one? Breaking and entering. And that you were doing that at 16. So 14,
15,
16. So. Wow. So 28, was it an overdose that kicked you into the right direction?
It kicked me to start getting in the right direction, but it didn't. My last overdose that I was rushed to the hospital for, I was using, I had $20 on me. I was heading, like, this is a true story. I was heading, walking from 22nd and Post, where I was staying at a motel. Had $20 left in my pocket. I was planning on scoring and then checking myself into
One last high.
Yep, one last high, and then I'm done. Gonna check myself into, it was the Salvation Army. That's by the Hardee's over there on East Washington. But so, I mean, on the way there, I walked all the way from there, and then when I was on 10th Street, I scored from somebody that I didn't know. I remember getting it and going to a bathroom in a gas station right there on the east side of town to use. And next thing I know, I'm handcuffed to a hospital bed in a basement. And I remember starting to cry. And I remember thinking, wow. And I thought of my daughter, and, you know, it blows my mind today that addiction is so powerful, that having a little girl, a sweet little precious girl, wasn't even enough, you know, to change my ways. But I remember crying and thinking whatever it was that saved that brought that police officer that broke into the door and administered Narcan and saved my life that time. I just remember feeling very lucky that I was alive. And even though I was going to jail, I didn't care. I was alive. I remember that real well.
Your daughter was how old at the time?
She was 3 or 4.
And her mom took care of her. She's from Anderson?
Yeah, she lives in Muncie.
In Muncie?
Yeah, she's from Muncie. You know, I went to jail for 2 days, got out. I didn't have anywhere to go. I stayed downtown on the street, literally on the sidewalk. I used my backpack as a pillow. You know, I used a hoodie for a blanket. It was just, it was pathetic. And I literally was bumming for change and just to get food, and food was an afterthought. It was to get booze or drugs or whatever it was. I did that for about 30 more days and went
after the hospital.
After the hospital.
After you started crying.
Yes, yeah. 30 days after that, I still used. That's again blows my mind, but it's very real. You know, I see the still suffering addicts out there that are doing the exact same thing that don't understand that you can change.
Do you know anybody who's, you walk down the street, do you ever go downtown and see people that
yes.
you knew?
Oh, so
oh,
I've
man.
I, many times I'm Jesus. Running. So I used to go to this soup kitchen mm-hmm. on 13th and Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And I know right where that is.
I would go there. I would be there every morning to eat, lining up with people. And I remember getting these looks from the people that are serving, like, what in the hell are you doing here? Like, you don't look like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You don't look like this, all these guys, like, what are you doing? And I remember taking that in, like, damn, you know, what the hell am I doing? But anyways, I remember, I mean, since I've been clean, I would run by there and they're all lined up. And I remember making eye contact with people that I was in that line with 2 years ago, waiting, and they're still there. And I'm running and my life is changing. And it was extremely impactful for me for us to, I recognized him, but I doubt he recognized me because he's in a fog. You know, I remember being in that fog.
You, running must mean a lot more to you than anything than just exercise.
Yes. Go back to the story. I went and filled out an application. I don't know what it is that made me get up off of the sidewalk, literally, and go and try to get help. And I went to Pathway to Recovery.
What was that name again?
Pathway to Recovery.
I think we need to say that one more time. It's called Pathway to Recovery. I will put it in. That's how we met, was mm-hmm. through me emceeing the event for them.
Yep.
And I'm going to put some information. So nice. You went and filled out an application.
Filled out an application. They didn't at the moment have any beds open, but they were probably, they were going to have some soon. For 3 days, I just hung around Pathway. You know, I ate some food there, but still lived outside. 3 days later, I get a bed. That was October
13th. You had
13th.
To go keep checking.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And that meant going up on Pennsylvania. Yeah,
mm-hmm. They want to show, so Pathway, they want to see a little bit of willingness, because that's the first thing you need if you're going to get clean, because we're not going to get clean for anybody else or for any other reason other than we want it for us. But I got in there, man. It was October 13th, 2016, and I haven't looked back, and I started running. And through another nonprofit called Back on My Feet, they're downtown. But little did I know, I was good at it.
Oh, Back on Our Feet. Know that. Mm-hmm. Okay, we've done stories on them at Wish. Okay.
Yep.
Sorry.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Probably me.
Yeah. No, I'm serious.
Yeah, I've been on the news a couple times for them.
And so you started running for them. So just, I want to be very clear. The police officer that broke in that day mm-hmm. to save you
yep.
at the gas station,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Was
Tanika.
Is that the police officer that spoke this year at the event?
She was there. She didn't speak. They played a video of me, and she didn't know why she was there. She was there because Chief Roach was there, the IMPD chief of police.
Yeah, by the way, this year Pathway to Recovery had IMPD Chief Roach, and the governor of the state of Indiana, and then there's video of you.
Yep.
And 2 years mm-hmm. ago, no, 3 years ago, you said 2016.
When I,
right.
That's when I got to Pathway.
Yeah. Probably right at the beginning of Holcomb's start mm-hmm. as governor.
Right.
Anyway. There you are. They're playing a video. She has no idea.
She doesn't know why she's there. I remember after I had a year clean, I wanted to find the police officer that was able to be there at that time. And because I've always read her name in my police report, but I've never been able to like reach out and say, hey,
it's me.
You don't remember me,
yeah.
But I have been waiting 3 years to meet you, and you saved my life. And because you were there at that moment, like, my daughter has a father, you know, and I try to be a role model for addicts that are still using, and unless it's like a podcast like this, I just like to use my actions. They speak real loud. And so I want to be a positive role model for anybody that's struggling. Cause
yeah, you don't want to talk about the negative stuff mm-hmm. with addicts because they've all been through it. We don't have to, we don't have to reiterate
exactly.
it. And so you use your positivity as a mm-hmm. way to help heal.
Yep. I use my story to let them know that I got scars. I have battle scars. I've been there and I know exactly how it feels. But if you want to go back to the running thing, I started running. I didn't realize I was good at it, and that's what it kind of set off my.
As he's fixing his knee, I'm seeing you touch your ankle mm-hmm. and stuff. You gotta,
yes, I do.
You must run a lot.
So I am. I'm training for Boston Marathon. I'll be running in April. So I have a fundraiser out for that too.
Where's that?
It's on. It's charity.gofundme.
Okay.
So I'll need to, it's Pathway to Recovery. I'll have to look
up
the link.
It's through Pathway. It's on GoFundMe?
Yep. It's on charity, GoFundMe. And the money goes to Pathway, but they're going to pay for my trip, and anything left over is going to help the new guy coming in, you know?
Great.
So
Yeah. It goes right to their program.
Yep.
So the police officer, she's there. She has no idea.
Has no idea.
Oh my God.
We hooked up with Chief Roach and were able to coordinate her being there. She thinks she's there just because the police are there. IMPD to represent them. She doesn't know that she's gonna get an award presented to her for nobody sees me award.
Yeah.
And it's, I remember I got up on stage and she's like,
how nervous are you?
I'm nervous. And the video we played is of me expressing my desire to meet this police officer. And I remember her telling me this. She was sitting in her seat going, oh, well, I'll help him find her. I'll help him find him. Chief Roach announces it's her. She gets up and she's just stunned and is bawling. And I just give her a huge hug at everybody. There's
not a dry eye in the house.
Yes. Yes. Everybody was crying, man. I was crying.
He got me almost now, man. Unbelievable.
My brother's crying. Everybody is. And you know, my mom was at the Pathway, fundraiser last year when you were there.
Oh, cool.
You got to see.
I remember.
But she passed away in an automobile accident.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
And she missed this year, but it just made me think of her. Like I really wish she was here. That is a huge reason why I'm running Boston also, is not only I'm running for people that are in recovery and for the ones that haven't found recovery yet. I'm running because I want them to see that anything is possible. And also it was mine and my mom's plan after I got clean and started running was for me to qualify at a race for Boston and then us both go together. So I went ahead with the plan and I qualified it.
I'm sure she went ahead with her plan, right?
Yes.
She's with God in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like to think that.
But. Yeah, she'll be with me for sure. A different sideline than what
That's
was expected.
That's a really good way to put it.
Exactly. But she's with me. So
what was your mom's name?
Jane Lyons. Great. She was an amazing woman.
I'm really sorry. I didn't know that.
Yep.
You know, I said to you on the phone before we did this, like, you know, I don't know your whole story.
Yeah.
I'm excited to learn about it. Mm-hmm. And, I'm more and more just like taken aback by this. This is definitely, if you guys know me, this is something that I'm very passionate about, bringing you guys good stories and something that means something. And I think this might be the top one out of everything. And I've interviewed everybody, because this is real life, guys. This is it. Wes is an example of how everybody should look at people's lives, other people's lives, not just our own, and let's feel sorry for the homeless guy in the corner. Mm-hmm. Let's like look into it, because they all they're mm-hmm. husbands, their wives, their you know, daughters and husbands, and I mean daughters and sons and uncles and aunts. You know, everybody has somebody. Mm-hmm. In all honesty, I'm going to tell you a story real quick. I'm at the YMCA. Was just elected to like the board of the YMCA. Whatever. Nice. I'm excited to try to give back. I like to say it. I've been telling a lot of people about it because I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, that is cool.
I was in the sauna, and I walked in, and sometimes people are always talking in the sauna, and this guy is like, F this, my freaking brother, I swear to God, he's an addict, he doesn't give a shit, and it's everything that mm-hmm. a family member. So I'm listening mm-hmm. to this. I have my headphones in, but my music's not on, but mm-hmm. you know, everybody's kind of chit-chatting about it. Ultimately was about Aaron Hernandez and mm-hmm. how Aaron Hernandez mm-hmm. went down this path, and then it got on to this guy. And so he's sitting there, he's ripping. And so I took my headphones out, and I was like, listen, man, and you may be your brother, but you may not know everything that that guy went through. Mm-hmm. And the best thing that I could tell him to do was to just love him and just to be there for him. And like, you know, he's like, but I can't take it. He's like, I can't take it anymore. I don't want to be there anymore because it's never going to change. Mm-hmm. I said, well, don't say that, because you never know. And then we left it at that. And I tried to, and for me, I'm trying to talk to this random guy that I've never met in the YMCA, tell him how to deal with his addict brother, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me, and everybody, what, in your opinion, would work to tell somebody? What do you tell an addict that may be your brother? Mm. Or what do you tell someone that you meet on the side that's a homeless person? What do you do if you see someone on the side of the street, in your opinion? I know those are three questions.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I want to know, how do you deal with it as a family member, and you have a family member dealing with it?
Right.
And how do you deal with it as a person in mm-hmm. society when you're walking down the street?
Yeah. So it's, I feel like there's different answers with the family member thing. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to enable them, you know, and love them through it, in the sense of helping them when they need help. But that may have a adverse effect on it, on the person, to where they just continue to use, because why wouldn't they?
They're isolating them, right? So you're saying you're alone, and you're just reaffirming the fact that they're not right, that they're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I think what you said is love them, tell them that they're loved, you know, but you honestly do. You have to. Sometimes it gets to where you have to separate yourself, because nothing anybody has ever said to me has made me want to stop using. Honestly, it's and our brains are that shut down to where all it's going to do is cause an argument. Seriously, you need to. The pain has to come from their own actions. And when I say there, I mean an addict.
Yeah,
that they have to suffer. And that sounds terrible, but in my experience, and probably most of the people I know, that's what, you know, it's what ultimately got them to consider stopping, was mm-hmm. when the pain got so much that they considered, I mean, looking into it, and then God, the universe, whatever it is, takes over.
What do you believe?
I believe in a higher power, and I call my higher power God, but not in the biblical sense. I just say God because it's really easy, and I'm a super spiritual guy, and I'm a space nerd. So like, I just, all the energy in the universe is my higher power. You know what I mean? So we're all connected.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. In whatever way that means to you,
yeah,
as well.
Exactly.
Whoever you're listening right now, and mm-hmm. wherever you are, you know, I'm a big believer in Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. I believe that He was sent to save us, and that and God's grace is the reason why you're here. That the reason why you were chained to that bed when you woke up was because Tanika.
Yep.
Tanika mm-hmm. picked you up, and that was God coming through.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of people out there that don't do it, that don't get picked up. So
very, very true.
So just tell them that you love them.
Yep.
tell him that you're there for him if you need him, and you know, don't give him money.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, he was this guy at the Y was like, I'm not giving him money anymore. No. I'm giving him food and water.
There you go. Yes. Right.
So that was good.
Water. Food and water is good. Yeah. That just.
What about if you want to help? If you're just a random person, if it's not a family member, that you're hearing, everyone's hearing your story and wants to do something about it.
Help somebody. That's what I say.
Yeah, we got that, seriously. Wes. Jeez, man. We got that.
Specifically?
Yeah, what?
Go to and donate to Pathway to Recovery and...
other organizations like
other it. Organizations that are helping people do that. And the reason Pathway is different and is people, they accept people coming straight off the street. They don't have to have money right away. And
they got Sandy Jeffers.
They have Sandy Jeffers.
That yep. Son of a bee. Yes. She is crazy cool.
Oh yeah. Sandy Jeffers.
I love that girl. She's awesome.
Yeah. Me and Sandy are pretty tight.
How many success stories come out of Pathway?
A lot. You know, it's different because it's a family type of atmosphere. It's not institutional. You know, you don't need money. That's a shocker to everybody because that prevents a lot of people from getting help is the money.
There you go.
And
because nobody wants to put into an institution when they're just going to take advantage of it and leave, you know, and they're just using it for a day where Pathway is different because they're actually there for the right reasons, and you have to prove yourself too, which that's I learned true. Doing a couple stories.
Yep.
Is that you at Pathway, you actually have to show different levels of a commitment, and people fall off all the time,
right? All the time. Yeah. People leave. That's just that they aren't ready, and you can't deny somebody that pain that they need to feel, or they're not ready. Hmm. It's an amazing organization. They saved my life. You know, I'm using, you know, I'm.
You're not using.
No, I'm not using drugs.
No. I asked you before we started, you know, just I was like, you're not using, you've been clean. And the 3 years, I mean, does it feel like you've just been reborn into a new person?
Yes. I mean, I don't ever say I feel alive again because I feel like I never was. Right. I just feel like I am born, like you just said, reborn. That's perfect.
Good for you, man.
Yeah, man.
We're really awesome. Proud of you.
Man, it's so cool. The sky's the limit.
Honestly. Isn't it crazy?
Oh, I'm patient, but I'm excited for what's to come in my life.
And the next thing to come is this marathon. What are you doing right now? How are you training? Talk about that. I want to hear that.
as of right now, I'm just nursing my leg and making sure it's fully 100% before I start getting into my training. But my coach wants me to eventually get to 100-mile weeks, which I don't know if I will be able to get to.
Don't do that, bro. Stop doing that. Look, you're making us all look bad.
No. I mean, I'm afraid.
What was wrong with your legs?
I just overtraining because I was doing the Monumental Marathon.
So that was the last one you did?
Yeah. Then overtraining. That's all.
Is that a Boston qualifier?
Yes, it is.
Ooh.
It is.
So Monumental Marathon is a Boston qualifier, and would you finish on that one?
I actually only ran half. Okay. So I didn't finish it.
Oh, so you... Oh,
I only ran because I didn't want to injure myself leading into Boston, and I knew Boston was coming.
So you already qualified for Boston when you hit the Monumental.
Yeah.
So for anybody who doesn't know, I know a little bit about running just in the sense you can enter Boston in a couple different ways, but ultimately the one way to do it is to qualify, and you have to, I think you have to hit 3 races, right, in an under time, or
it's just,
5?
Just one.
Oh, just one.
Just one race, but you're...
Oh, man, I'm talking about it like I know.
It's okay. your age, and it's just by your age. So my age group was I had to run under 3 hours, and you usually want like a cushion there too, so...
And it's almost like you're competing too, right?
Yeah. Oh,
like you're actually going to score.
Yes.
Like sometimes... When I actually qualified, and I put that in quotations because I qualified for New York during 2011 Sandy, and it was canceled. It was the only New York City marathon ever canceled, and I qualified and I couldn't go because I qualified for, I ran the half marathon up in Corning, New York, and ran it fast enough where I actually qualified, but I also raised money.
Yes.
So you can do it for organization mm-hmm. and run as a charity,
yep.
but you're running to compete.
Yeah.
So you might, mm-hmm. we might actually see on TV.
Man, that would be cool. I mean, just a brief glimpse of me even would be pretty neat. So they're going to, it's on Patriots Day, so it's on a Monday. So
it's the juxtaposition of what you just said is incredible to me.
What?
Just a brief look of you mm-hmm. on TV.
Yeah.
But there are so many times where people give you a brief look downtown.
Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere.
All the time.
And now we're here.
Yep.
If there's one thing, advice, piece of advice that you would say for maybe someone who is struggling with addiction or a family member mm-hmm. or just any piece of advice that you've learned that you would, we're going to close out here pretty soon, but what would you say?
Man, I would say give yourself a break and don't be so hard on yourself. You know, don't be afraid to ask for help. That was huge for me. And it kept me out and using for a long time. If you're using, you know, tell somebody, ask for help, reach out your hand. I know there's so many people out there that, you know, are willing to take it, take that opportunity.
Shame is super powerful.
It's so powerful. Oh,
and,
man.
I mean, that's all it is that you feel shameful about who mm-hmm. you are. Guys.
So true.
We're all imperfect. It's just a matter of yep. who can admit it first.
That's it. Right.
And stop hiding. Come on, we all know. Even yeah. if you're a complainer or like you're yeah. somebody at work who complains, it's like, I heard today Daryl Strawberry is mm-hmm. an addict who
yeah.
turned his life around and yeah. now is a preacher. And I listened to a podcast and this morning and literally it was like he said, anybody, if you're pointing fingers at somebody else, turn it around and point it at yourself because mm-hmm. that's all that's really going on.
Yeah.
So
true.
Dude.
So true.
You're the man.
Yeah.
You're thanks, the man.
No,
nope. Absolutely.
I'm super average, man.
You don't sound average. You're good.
I'm just doing what I should have been doing a long time ago. But
you're wasted 28 years.
28 years.
Well, I wouldn't say all those 28.
Right, right. But, there was a few good years in there somewhere. But
somewhere about 12 to 13 years.
Yeah,
you were wasting.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, we're gonna get the info for you guys on my website so that everybody can go and help Wes get to Boston. You know, I might give this to my news department as well at Wish to try to have them cover it because I can't cover it anymore. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not a news reporter yeah. anymore. But I, at the end of every podcast, I ask my guests to say, stay safe. It's something I say at the end. It's very mm-hmm. simple, but I kind of wanted you to do it in your own way so you can expand on it. You can just say it or just do what you want. But I kind of want you to close it out. By saying stay safe. He's
yeah,
looking at me like I'm crazy.
So you want me to say safe?
You could say it in your own way. If it's just those two.
You're gonna have
I don't
to
explain
this.
Maybe I need to change this. I don't explain this to my podcast guests yeah. before the thing. I just yeah. remember to tell them at the end on the podcast. If you guys made it to this point where you're listening, you know that I do this every single time. So I want you to say stay safe or mm-hmm. you can say kind of a closing statement.
Stay safe. I love life today, you know, and it's an honor to me to share my story. It's hard, and the vulnerability piece is it's hard every time, but if it's going to help one person, then it's worth it. And thanks for listening.
Thanks, Will. Awesome.
Dude,
you're the man.
Yes, dude. You know.
And there you go. And Wes is the man. And thanks again to him for taking the time and opening up and sharing his story like you heard there at the end. If he just keeps doing it, if he keeps getting over the fact that he's scared about sharing it, he's going to help one person. So I'm still moved to this day from that interview. And I don't think I'll ever forget that conversation I had with him as you guys were listening. It was mind-blowing. We got more stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks. But again, just a reminder,
If you want to learn more, go to infamousindie.com, where all my stuff is. You can also go to Infamous Indie Podcast on Instagram, and then our Facebook page as well. In the end, we are going to be live April 18th at the Vogue. You got to follow, guys. You got to know about it. Buy tickets soon, and we'll make sure we're excited and big time stuff happening at the Vogue. I mean, what a venue to be able to showcase what we do and what we love. I hope you guys have a great week. And as I always say, stay safe.